Welcome to the NAPMA Maximum Impact Teleconference Call Archive CD. Each month, you're encouraged to join our NAPMA executive team of proven hyper-successful school owners, including Grandmaster Stephen Oliver, Master Toby Milroy, Grandmaster Jeff Smith, and many other special guests, along with our group of hundreds of growth-minded school owners from every corner of the globe, all gathering to collaborate, share what's working today strategies, proven successful marketing techniques, and tried and true business principles to help you take your school to the next level on this live teleconference. But this is also your chance to have your specific questions answered by our brain trust of industry experts. Check the call schedule in your member support package or in your members resource website for call-in times and access information. So let's jump right into this call in progress.
All right, everybody, welcome to our Maximum Impact call for, May? Is that right? Yes, May. Oh, my gosh. The year is slipping away on us. If anybody's having any trouble, we're having some technical issues on the back end. It shouldn't affect you as a caller on the conference line right now. We're having a little bit of a technical problem with the software application that manages the call. So if you're having any trouble hearing or getting the functions to work on your phone, try to disconnect and call back in. There are a couple of little software issues apparently I'm having on my end. I don't understand what it is. We've got the guys working on it, but it shouldn't affect you as a caller. But if for some reason you're having trouble hearing or something like that, you may want to hang up and call back in. We have a lot to accomplish today. As everyone's well aware, we are in the midst of several, kind of big moves, big new innovations and things like that through not only our NAPMA membership and our members and our programs, but also with our people forming inner circle groups and things like that. So we have a lot of moving parts right now, a lot of things that are happening that we're really excited about, and we're getting, we're very excited about the results that we're seeing with school owners, frankly, all over the world. But today's specific purpose is to really hone in on some fundamentals. And there are a couple of core fundamentals that we really have to have a complete understanding of and a complete grasp of if you're really going to take your business to the next level this year and, frankly, forever. So I'm excited to talk a little bit about that today and sort of walk through some of these concepts. Another piece of what I'm pretty excited about, as most of you have seen, we've launched most of the new online resources for our members. There's actually a couple of more resources that are coming over the next few weeks as well. But you'll see that we have the new NAPMA Marketing Center up and running, and that is sort of a one-stop shop for you in any and all of your print marketing needs, especially things like postcards and ad cards and rack cards and things like that, just to make it easy for everyone. And then also what you're going to be seeing over the next number of weeks is a dramatic expansion of what's available to you there, including some of the long-form type direct mail campaigns that we like to do and funny, kitschy mail and things like that are really, really useful and productive for lead generation and lead conversion. So stay tuned for all that, and you definitely want to check that site out and see what there is what we have to offer up there. The second piece is in the Classroom Mastery Institute, the video service. Right now there's about 380 or almost 400 different little classroom videos. And I actually have a bunch more in the pipeline that we'll be uploading over the next several weeks. But there's a feature that I kind of wanted to ask everyone to take a look at and perhaps even contribute is you can actually upload your own classroom videos. So if there's, a teaching methodology or a teaching strategy that you like to use in your school that's productive and successful and useful for you and your students, it'd be great if you'd share with the group. So you can just go to that Classroom Management Institute, and there's a big button on the right-hand side that says Share Your Videos. You can pop a video up on YouTube and upload it right there. So you might want to take a look at that. We're going to have a few little activities wrapped around that over the next couple of weeks, so that'll be kind of interesting. So that's pretty much the quick housekeeping list. The other is, obviously, for all of our Inner Circle and People Forum members, we're ramping up dramatically to our West Point leadership experience coming up in about 2.5 weeks. And I do still have about 3 or 4 spots available in that group for that event. And basically what we're part of what we're discussing today is renewal systems and how to leverage value in our programs. And one of the concepts that we work with our Inner Circle and People Forum members on at great depth and in great detail is how to implement those types of programs inside their schools. And, you know, it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of focus. There are a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of little details when it comes to, you know, installing a high-level leadership program, a high-level upgrade process in your school. And it's something that we really, you know, we really walk through one-on-one, bit by bit with all of our, you know, members that are, you know, that we're working with one-on-one. And the West Point experience is really going to be a powerful experience for everyone to not only see sort of the 40,000 foot in the air perspective of how West Point creates leaders in 4 years, creates leaders of character, creates these people who are going to go on and, you know, lead troops and, you know, lead our soldiers and lead people, have their lives in their hands, but also some of the behind the scenes inner workings of how they manage that experience as a school, which is exactly what we're doing in martial arts schools. So how they orchestrate and utilize each minute of each day to generate that result, to develop that result. So we're really excited about that. I do have maybe 3 or 4 spots available that we can put, you know, a few more people. So I know Master Oliver and I have been talking to, you know, lots and lots and lots of members who are you know, current legacy members in a lower level program that this might be appropriate for. So if this is something that you're interested in, if you're really digging into your school, and trying to create a better business this year, we really need to talk on the telephone and take a look at what your current numbers are, take a look at what the current operational structure of the school is, and do some deep diagnosis. And this might be something that can really help you leapfrog and move to the next level quickly. So give Bob a call at the office at 727-540-0500, extension 202. And he can set that time up for you, or you can just go to natma.com/private coaching session and go through the process there. So that's, you know, really the quick, you know, 3-minute housekeeping list. So, Mr. Oliver, since you're with us, you know, part of the premise for the day is this, is that there are really only 4 ways. You know, something that's really important for everybody, I think, to focus on is focusing on what's important, right? And for every school owner, in fact, frankly, every small business owner of any category, but for every school owner, there are only 4 ways to grow your business. There are only 4 things that you can do. And I'm going to assume that the 4th is almost a moot point. And number 4 is basically reducing expenses. So, you know, and you have to do that intelligently. We'll go through that. That's mostly not much of a challenge in our niche. Most schools run pretty lean. You know, there's not a lot of fat in most cases. But so there's only 4 ways to grow any business.
Well, and parenthetically, when there is, it's easy to identify. It just to remind everybody, we've said of the 3 major categories: payroll, advertising, and rent. Is what most people do is they want the Taj Mahal, so they get too elaborate a facility. On a day-by-day basis, there's not much you can do about that other than renegotiate if you're already stuck in that. Payroll tends to run a little high, but what happens is instead of paying one or two really good people really well, is schools as they grow tend to get too much headcount, and all of a sudden they have a whole bunch of part-timers that are being paid the wrong way, you know, $40 a class versus having a couple salary plus commission people. And the third thing, it's pretty much everybody underspends on advertising, and the thing that we're of course bringing to the table is helping them really understand how to do that effectively, how to place their advertising, and how to really have the right type of opportunities there. But anyway, just parenthetically, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty easy subject to understand.
No, that's exactly right. It's a pretty easy formula, And there are places where schools underspend that usually is pretty, you know, like you said, pretty dramatically hamstringing too. But so there's only four things that you can do. There are only four ways to grow your martial arts school, any small business in general. There's only four things. Number one, you get more customers, right? You have more students. Number two is you increase the transaction size. You increase the amount of money that people, happily and willingly pay for your services. Number three, you increase the transaction frequency, meaning that they pay that more times. In our industry, in our operational structure, that's retention. And then number four is, reduce expenses. So there's only four things that you can do: more customers, more students, higher revenue per student, longer longevity per student, or reduce expenses. Those are the only four things that you can do. I think if you really just stop for a minute, and trust me, we all understand, I understand, as well as anyone, the myriad of the weight and the gravity of all the things that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, right? And more than anything, I think this is what hamstrings a school from getting to the next level, is we get so overwhelmed and distracted by the million things that we have to do today, tomorrow, and the next day.
Yeah.
That we forget to focus. Yeah, yeah, and it's there is natural gravity to every crisis that happens. It sucks you into it, right? And what happened? And I think that's the biggest challenge in this industry and in any other, frankly, is that we're so busy with those things that we forget about those four things I just said. There are only four things that you can do to grow your business: more customers, more students, higher transaction size per student, higher transaction longevity, higher longevity per student, or reduce expenses. So if you're focused on anything but those four things, then you should admit to yourself today that you're busy being busy.
Yeah.
So this leads into our conversation then today, Mr. Oliver. And obviously one of the solutions that we have to increasing transaction size is renewals, and that'll be part of our topic today. But if you were just going to focus on those four things, Mr. Oliver, if we wanted to start at the beginning, more new customers, where would you start with that on a school that we're working with, especially one-on-one, where would you start with?
Well, I think the starting point is that school owners really have to understand that before they can be in the business of teaching, they've got to be in the business of acquiring enough students. And you and I have talked to hundreds of school owners who are doing little or no marketing. And you can do it with spending a lot of money, or you can do it with spending a lot of grunt work out in the community, or a combination of those two. But you really are never going to fill your school up by sitting behind your desk hoping for the best. And what a lot of really small failing schools tell me is that they predominantly bring people into word of mouth, but unfortunately, usually what they mean by that is they're just sitting there hoping that their happy students are going to bring them people. They don't mean that they have 10 different referral sources going on every month. So the starting point really is to recognize that we're in a business that requires proficiency and activity on marketing every day. And the first thing you should do when you get out of bed in the morning, everybody knows I'm kind of a big go-sit at Starbucks with my legal pad type of guy, but go somewhere where nobody's going to bother you, the phone's not going to ring, and say, what can I do today to generate more students in the school? And how do I stay focused every day on having, five new students a week, one new student a day? It's not a very difficult number, but if you're not focused on it, a week goes by and you only get one or two new students. And now instead of doing one new student a day, you're doing one new student every couple of days, and your numbers don't work. So, that's the first thing, is become attuned to the fact that you are in now, always will be, in a business that requires marketing. And if you get good enough and have enough students, you may be blessed with the fact that you can do enough internal referral-generating type of events and activities to get enough students. In most cases, we need to do paid advertising, we need to do a lot of community outreach, and oftentimes a lot of focused work on the internet, pay-per-click one thing or another to get traffic as well.
Yeah, I it's a rare situation, but I think I would even go a step further. And you know, I remember a long time ago. I can't remember exactly where I was sitting, but Dan Kennedy was the one who made the statement, and I'm relatively certain that he, you know, stole it from someone else. But I happen to remember the experience, and sort of the light bulb moment for me was Dan sort of thundering away, which he's pretty good at. You know, he was sort of thundering away, and he said, listen. I think it's very, very useful for everybody. This made a big impact on me. This is something I think that would be very useful for everyone to internalize. He said, listen, in small business, whatever business you think you're in, you're wrong, right? If you're a chiropractor, you're no longer in the chiropractic business. If you're a martial arts instructor and you open a school, you are no longer in the martial arts instructor business. If you're a restaurant owner and you own if you're a cook and you go open a restaurant, you are no longer in the cooking business. You are now in the business of marketing and selling your service, right? So if you're a martial arts school owner, you're no longer in the teaching martial arts business. You're in the marketing and selling of martial arts lessons business. Now, certainly you have to have a system in place to deliver the product. You certainly have to have systems in place to teach, right? And we have to be great at it, frankly. But your focus no longer is on, you know, being the best side kicker. Right, your focus now is, like you said, every day. How do I generate 1 to 2 enrollments a day? You know.
Yeah. So well, it was the Peter Drucker comment. He, if you don't know, was, you know, one of the great management theorists of all times, and passed away recently at 80 something or 90 something. But his comment was that the purpose of all business is to acquire and keep a customer. And you know, if you think about that in the simplest terms. You know, I often butcher that one and say the purpose of every martial arts school is to acquire a new student, to renew them, and then keep them for life. But it's the same thing. I just view the renewal process is one of the key components to keeping them forever. It's also, if you do it properly, it's a key component to continuing to improve the, you know, the monthly and yearly student value from the student.
Yeah, and let's look at that from the other perspective. So again, if we go back to those four premises, you know, there are only four ways to grow your business. That's it. There's only four things you can do, right? Now, you know, certainly there's a lot of granularity to that. We can, you know, there's all sorts of things, you know, strategies for acquiring new customers, all these things, and of course that's what we get to. But you know, there are only four things, and if you can stay focused on those four things, it's hyper useful. When it comes to, you know, number two, which is higher revenue per student, higher revenue per customer, which is basically in any other business, if you think about it, it's simply how do I increase the value of what I offer so that people are willing and happy to pay a premium, to pay more than they paid yesterday, right, for the thing. And I don't mean you raise the prices on the current people. I mean you deliver something in the market that's more valuable than what, you know, what you used to think you were worth yesterday, right? So well, the renewal system is one of the tools that we have to do that, right? Having an upgrade process, some system where we bring a student into the program, promising them that we can solve certain problems for them. We actually go solve those problems for them. Now what happens in the customer's mind, in the student's mind, is now they have a new set of problems, right? So it, none of this is about, you know, bait and switch strategy or anything like that. You've gone. Think about Sylvan Learning Center, for example. Let's use that for an outside of our own skin example to be a little more comfortable, perhaps for some. If you're in Sylvan, if you have a Sylvan Learning Center location and a student comes in and they're having trouble with, let's say, for example, reading, right? Now think about what Mrs. Jones is thinking. You know, the mom of that 9-year-old is in her mind saying to herself, "Man, we've got to do something about this because Johnny isn't. Not only is he not going to graduate from college, my God, I'm fearful that he's not going to go from third to fourth grade, right? So they put him in your program, and you fix the problem. You now get Johnny up to his reading level. Well, now what's happening in Mrs. Johnny's mind? Well, number one, she's grateful, you know, that you fixed it, right? You did what you did what you said you were going to do. That's what everybody needs to be doing, right? But now she might also be thinking, well, man, these guys were great. They fixed that problem. Well, now that I'm not fearful that Johnny's just going to be functional in school, I wonder if these guys could take him even further. I wonder if they could, you know, now that they've made him functional, I wonder if they could do things to make him, like, really successful in school or, you know, those types of things. And
well, and you know, let's step back for a second and recognize what a lot of people's fears are. And what one fear that I think a lot of martial artists have is that they're fearful of asking a student for a commitment. And so you and I talk to a lot of people who do, you know, month-to-month agreements. They pay monthly, you know, give us 5-day notice, and you can cancel your agreements. And the problem that we're starting, that we're needing to solve right at the outset is the fact that we suffer from a syndrome, which is the parent doesn't come in thinking of this like the child is going to graduate from middle school and then from high school and then go on to Harvard or go on to, you know, UCLA or whatever it might be. What they often come in, and for the kids market, they come in and think of it like an activity. And for the adults, oftentimes they come in thinking of it as a short-term fix to a problem. In other words, woman comes in to a cardio program thinking that if I work out hard for 90 days, I can lose 10 pounds and I can look better in my bikini, not thinking of it as just a permanent lifestyle change. Adult male, same deal. And so the first problem that we're always looking to solve, and it's for some people, it's a paradigm shift for them, is we're looking to solve the process of really helping them to understand that this is now a real commitment to a lifestyle change. And so the first piece of this whole renewal process is to get somebody to go from thinking of this as a 90-day thing to getting them to think in terms of this as a real lifestyle change, something they're going to do on an ongoing basis. So what I think, Master Milroy, a lot of school owners get bogged down in is they miss the fact that if you don't really take the first 3 months of a student and get them thinking in terms of being a black belt, of what the outcome is going to be from them, what the benefit is going to be from them, that what you're doing is you're cheating them out of an opportunity to make a decision to be with it long term, as opposed to doing martial arts for 90 days or 6 months or 9 months and then dropping out. And you and I see an awful lot of schools that have really horrible retention. And part of the reason they have horrible retention is they're probably not very engaging in class, but they also don't ever get a 12-month or a 24-month or a commitment to black belt from their students. And so you got to start with that the first problem we're trying to solve, the first thing that we're trying to do is help them be with us long enough to really accomplish a lot. And at the same time, to solve the problem that all martial arts schools have, is students who drop out before they graduate. In other words, if I looked at a high school in the Denver metro area and they said to me with a straight face, 7% of our students drop out every month, therefore 72% or 74% drop out in their freshman year, and our graduation rate statistically is close to zero, you fire everybody on staff and you'd close down the school and you'd be looking for somebody new for the school board who could run the place properly. But we have black belt school owners who say things like that to us with a straight face, thinking it's okay. Is that a fair thing to say?
No, absolutely. And you know, I think an example I've used, I think that resonates pretty well with a lot of folks that I'm working with, kind of one-on-one, is if you take a look back at the genesis of martial arts as a business in the U.S., if you go all the way back to, pre-even Pat Burleson, let's say, and let's look at Holiday Hell Spa versus, Arthur Murray, Fred Astaire Dance Studios, right? And, the Holiday Hell Spa model knew that, they were going to do 1,000 new enrollments in January and hope to God that nobody ever showed up again to use all the equipment at the same time, right? So that was a mass market play. That was a keep the prices as low as you can, enroll as many as you humanly can in January. Don't worry about retention or service much because, you can't have them all show up or you're kind of screwed, right? And then when you look at that in contrast to what Arthur Murray and Fred Astaire did with the dance studios, they knew that they were not a mass market product. They knew that they were not going to go and put 1,000 people into the dance school, in January. Instead, they had to create that business model based on, instead of several thousand customers, a couple of hundred. So if you look all the way back to the 1920s, I mean, their model was, in fact, I even, Michelle, I should send these over to you, but I dug up some old direct response full-page magazine ads for Arthur and Murray Dance Studios. And the copy's fantastic. You know, I mean, there's some really good stuff. But what their paradigm on the structure was they had to sell a program, right? And their program basically was, if you go to a party, if you're one of the social, you know, type elite, and you're going to go to a party in 1924, you have to know this dance, in order to not feel like a social outcast, right? So when you come to the school, they do a little intro, and they test you out, and they check your coordination, and this and that and the other thing, and they say, okay, well, listen, here is the XYZ program, I don't know, the social butterfly program, I don't know what it's called, right? And it's going to teach you to be this, and this. Here's how it works. And it was based on creating a long-term relationship. It wasn't based on exchanging X dollars for a month of dance lessons. It had to be about an outcome, or they knew people would come in, learn two or three steps, and they'd never see them again. You know, so the best thing for the student, the best thing for the customer, and of course it was the best thing for the business as well, was to do the work up front to convince that person, that customer, that what they really wanted was an outcome, not a month of lessons. They wanted a thing, right? So I think that's useful just from a paradigm standpoint to take a look at, and it's interesting and a little bit strange that, you know, fast forward, 90 years, and there's still that same sort of perception gap in our niche. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if that's the right way to describe
it. Well, I think it's easy to understand why there's a perception gap, because in the ones who aren't doing this right, 25% a year go out of business.
Well, that's right.
And
that's right.
So
about 2,000 a year. Yeah.
That means that statistically, almost everybody who runs a school is running a school within year two or 3 years. The other thing that statistically is reality is very few business owners ever do any research on their own business or do any research on comparables, you know, which is always one of the things that's made us unique is looking at all the comparables and what they do well and looking at our industry and what people have done poorly in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s to, you know, prevent that from people who pay attention today. But let's go back to the renewal process, because that's our topic. But issue one that I hear from some people is that they don't like the idea of you come in paying $150 a month, and now I quote-unquote bait and switch you into paying $250, $300 a month. And I think first is, I guess we could say it two ways. One is, it's clearly true that there are some very high-grossing schools that, you know, don't do that, that purely have gone through a process of, you know, charging $200 a month, and then you renew and you pay $200 a month. I think it's a short-sighted strategy, but if your retention is fabulous, then you certainly can create a pretty high level of growth that way. But I think when people look at it that way, they miss a couple of things. One is, human beings, certainly in the United States, are familiar with the idea that anywhere you go, there's a variety of services offered. And you can have the least expensive one, you can have the maybe the middle range normal one, or you can have the premier experience. And if you look at, you know, we're looking at Disney quite a bit this year. So if you look at Disney, it's a marvelous example of, you know, at one end of the spectrum is they have you know, you can go in and you can stay at the lowest end hotel on the property, and you can buy the standard gate admission and all that stuff. At the high end, you can stay in a premier property. You know, you can get a room rate for up to I don't know what the top end is, but it's probably up to $5,000 a night or more. And what you can then do is you can buy a pass where a live employee walks you into the park before it opens, walks you out of the park after it opens, walks you to the behind the scenes corridors. And so, you know, if anything, the most family friendly you know, location in the country that services one of the broadest range of people in the country, have a wide variety of everything from restaurants to hotel rooms to ways to get in the park. At Universal, you can pay approximately double and get the pass where you go in the back door and jump the line on every line, which I certainly did in a heartbeat. So there's certainly no reason in the world why you shouldn't feel comfortable. And, you know, I know one of the examples that gets used by people who don't like the idea is, well, all of our students fly first class, and use the example of walking on an airplane and there's the 8 people in first class and I resent it. But I go to any hotel and I can get the $99 room special with a king bed or 2 double beds, or I can get the suite. I can go to any restaurant, and I can get the filet mignon and lobster, or I can get the roast beef sandwich, or I can get a salad, and all of those have different prices attached. So it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether it's buying a car and you have a choice of a Ferrari, a Mercedes, a Hyundai, a Kia, or a Cadillac or Chevrolet, or whether it's going into a hotel or you're flying, they're pretty much anywhere somebody looks, they have differentiated product options, including gymnastic schools and dance schools in many cases.
Well, in our environment, we have an additional piece of leverage or an additional piece of opportunity where solving problem A for the customer, for a student, creates a natural want and need for solving other problems. So again, if I take my Sylvan example, let's transpose it onto a martial arts school. If I'm a parent of an 8-year-old and her elementary school teacher just came to me and said, listen, you know, we're really concerned about Sophie, her focus in school. She's really kind of all over the place. She's not listening to the teacher. This is something we really need to address now before it creates serious problems. I come and put her in your program. 3, 4, 5 months later, whatever the number is, a number of experiences later, that problem, I see that you're fixing the problem, right? I see that now not only is she able to focus, but she can be really good. Now my natural needs, my natural wants, my natural, forward-moving, psychology tells me, well, listen, now that she's kind of functional, boy, I wonder if there's something that we can do now that I can visualize her being functional in school and that she's going to be able to, do what she needs to do. I wonder what we can do to take her to the next level so that she can actually, go on to great things, not just, my vision of her when I knew that she was all over the place was, God, I hope she can get a job at McDonald's when she graduates or drops out of high school, right? Now my vision is, man, I wonder if there's something that we can do to prepare her for an executive career or a management career or a career in, So it's now a new set of problems that I can solve for that person.
Well, but the other self-righteous objection, if I can use that rather inflammatory term, is let's start with the idea of what is the right price for any product or service. Is if you don't have, I like it because yesterday was the all the morons camping out in the, downtown and, passing out packets of powder with the Wall Street guys. And what's the right price for any product? Well, the right price for the product is the price that enough people will pay for the product, that it maximizes your net profit and maximizes your business objectives. And all you have to do is look in the news right now. And one of the arguments, say, on the digital books, what's the right price for an e-reader? Well, Amazon thinks the right price for an e-reader is below their costs, because they have essentially a monopoly on selling the books. Apple thinks the right price is one that they make a 40% margin or a 35% margin. Which one is right? Well, for their own business objectives, they're both right. And there's no such thing as having a price that's too high for martial arts if you have enough prospective students who are willing to pay that price, that it maximizes your other business objectives. And the argument can be made on the other end in some cases. I usually don't end up on that end of the spectrum. But the argument can be made at the other end of the spectrum sometimes that a super low price maximizes the objectives. I think it's hard in the martial arts business to do that. But you have to be over the idea that there's a price that's too high. And I think a lot of people miss the fact either, and by the way, if they're horrible as a teacher, they have to fix that part. And if they really don't like human beings and don't provide, you know, good student service, then there's a big issue there that needs to be fixed. But if they're truly, if somebody wants to get to a black belt, really has accomplished life-changing behavioral changes, if they really are immune to negative peer pressure, if they're really able to thrive in their career, if they ever get attacked, they're going to be able to fully defend themselves. They've accomplished something that's priceless. And so none of us should be hesitant about how much we charge. And I do run into a fair number of martial arts school owners who either come from one or two backgrounds. They either came from a background where they're broke, and they say to themselves, there's no way I could pay that, so therefore I can't charge another human being that. Or they come from a background where they maybe grew up with middle class, or upper middle class, and had money, but they start to think of this as a charitable activity while they're in fact trying to run a for-profit business. See, both of those attitudes get in your way. Is in the 60s, I guarantee there were a whole bunch of people running around talking about how Bruce Lee was ripping people off, charging Steve McQueen and others $1,000 an hour for private lessons. But was he charging the right price? Well, I don't know. Ask just about any martial artist today if they would have been willing to pay $1,000 an hour for private lessons with Bruce Lee. The answer is probably hell yes. But you know, he was being criticized on all fronts. Back then, people forget about that. So we do have to get over the idea that $75 a month is the right price, or $150 a month is the right price. And you know, I've had people that I've done coaching with that I've gotten to charge $1,297 a month for a martial arts related program, and the students were happy to pay it. And we've had people who had somebody pay them $30,000 for the year, or $35,000 per year, for a martial arts program that people were willing to pay. And it's just, if you have trouble with some of the things we talk about, it's either because your sales system isn't in place, or more often than not, you're thinking about how to look at this as a business is off base.
Yeah, so I think, let me reiterate what you said too, because I think it's pretty useful for everybody. Again, one of the opportunities, in fact, it's a double-sided sword. It's an opportunity and it's a challenge that we have, is that our product really is priceless, right? The challenge, and one of the reasons that a renewal slash upgrade process is useful in martial arts schools, is because it's very difficult. It's very, very, very difficult to explain and have a person fully understand and believe the value of our thing within just a couple of lessons. Right? Very difficult. It's pretty easy for us to describe to them and explain to them and get them to actually believe that we're much more valuable than baseball, soccer, football, or whatever else, right? That's pretty easy to do. But to get them to fully understand the true value of what we do, it's almost impossible to do in two or three or four lessons. But it's actually pretty easy to do over the period of two, three, or four months, right? So if one of the reasons in this business, and dance is very similar, and gymnastics is similar, there are some similarities in some, is that once we put a person into our program, if we do our job in the program, if we do what we promise we're going to do, if we keep the promise, then it's pretty easy for us to communicate the real benefits of what we do on a long-term basis and get people to really understand that. So, you know, like you said, if the value is priceless, there really is no number. So I totally agree. The other thing is, too, if we look at it from like a pragmatic standpoint, again, we're focusing on the only four things that you can do to grow your business. If renewals are one piece of that, so what other pieces of leverage would you use in a structure like this to increase that transaction size, to increase that value per student? What would you be doing on that front? Did I lose you? Or did you lose me?
I'm sorry, I was on permanent mute there. repeat the question, Master Miller. I was with my phone trying to get off mute.
No, I wasn't sure if I lost you or you lost me. I was saying the again, if we look back at the four things that you can do to grow a business, you know, more customers, higher revenue per customer, longer, longer longevity, and then reducing expenses. Since we're on the increasing value per customer, when we're looking at the renewal system, that's obviously one of the solutions, right? One of the opportunities that you have is having some type of an upgrade process, some type of a higher level program that a black belt club or a master's club or a leadership program, something like that. Well, what are maybe a couple of other things on the list that a school can do to increase that value per student, that revenue per student?
Well, you know, in my opinion, is we start with the fact that, you know, business premise number one is that there are, if you're trying to do 100 things, it's very difficult to get them all done. If you're focusing on a couple of simple and discrete processes, it's easier. And so, you know, we see schools that try to make a little extra money with a Coke machine in the corner, try to make a little extra money with a juice bar, try to make a little extra money by having a big pro shop, try to make a little extra money from a list of things like that. And I really do believe in most cases is you end up, stepping over dollars to pick up pennies or dimes is really the major point of focus that we have. And that's not to say that you can't do, say, a huge summer camp. We had Will Mayer on with us, I think, the last call, and he spent a lot of time talking about, six-figure nets over the summer with summer camps. And for everybody who's interested in doing that, we can certainly put together a bonus hour or something and really spend some time on that. But there are things like that you can do. But in most cases, anything from promoting a tournament to really spending a lot of time with square footage in a pro shop to, you know, the juice bar, that pales in comparison with improving your customer service, keeping your students twice as long. In other words, dropping your monthly attrition rate or dropout rate from 7% to 6% to 4% to 3% to 2%. And then having a really strong renewal process. And the renewal process is designed for two things. One, it's designed to really anchor people in for longevity, so it's designed to improve your student retention. Number two, it's designed to create a process where you have a program or two that is at a much higher price point that people will be thrilled to pay, or at least some portion of them will be if you present it properly. So, you know, my argument would be in almost all cases, everything else is a sideshow in comparison and contrast with those two primary points of focus.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the only other piece of it that you mentioned earlier is that I think once you've kind of mastered the process of solving problem A, showing them the path to solving problem B and C, in almost all locations that I've done a lot of you know some deep digging into, the system I stole from you and I think I kind of took the ball and ran with it a little bit was, you know, I created my own version of a personal development program mm-hmm. that sat on top of the martial arts program. So really it was like, you know, kind of like what Tony Robbins would do, but I ain't Tony, right? Mm-hmm. So if I looked at my student base and across the three locations.
Nor do you have to be.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right, which I think is one of the great opportunities in what we do. But if you look at your student base, and again, I was looking at it over three locations, just a little under 1,000 students, and I'm saying to myself, well, listen, of these 1,000 human beings who know, like, and trust me, what can I do to help them get what they want, right? And it's the old Zig Ziglar quote, you can get anything out of life, you know, that you want if you help enough other people get what they want. So I looked at those 1,000 people and I said to myself, well, of these 1,000 human beings, what is it that they really want? What is it that I'm not currently delivering to them? I'm not serving their needs. What else are they out there doing that I could help them with? And my answer to it was, well, listen, you know, many of them who are not physically participating in the martial arts system itself, you know, parents and things like that, they're entrepreneurs, they're business owners, they're self-employed people, they're managers, they're executives, they're people who are, you know, career-driven, focused and success-driven people. And the process that we teach our martial arts students about being successful is the best process on the planet for being successful. So why can't we create a program, you know, why can't we create something to be able to help them with that? And again, if you look at a few of our inner circle members who have kind of implemented such a thing, something like Sean Harvey with his 360 Fit program, that's a takeoff on this concept.
With a $297 a month, a $497 a month, and a $997 a month level.
Exactly, and my personal implementation of it was I started off at $497 and I went to $997, and basically what it was mostly parents of students who were self-employed, business owners, physicians, attorneys, accountants, you name it, and it was a four quadrant personal success program, and really it's modeled on the martial arts system. It's modeled on setting a long-term goal, breaking that long-term goal down into intermediate, short-term, and daily actionable goals. All that sort of stuff. And really, that is what we teach our students anyway. It's the exact same process. And we had great results with it. We had people that really went out and took their career by the throat and accomplished what it was they were going to accomplish. But again, I think it's this exact same thing. If there's only four ways to grow your business, how do I increase that value per customer? How do I increase that value per customer? The only answer that I can come up with on that is you have to solve bigger problems. And I think that's kind of like the pragmatic piece.
And one of the other examples is some people know Lloyd Irving. One of the things I got Lloyd to do was to implement a high-level program. And in this case, it's an MMA, adult male MMA program. And he's now got it, I think a $1,297 a month level and a $1,597 a month level. And you know, if you want to gross 100,000, it's certainly easier if you have 20 people at $1,597 a month. And what I've always told everyone is, in any student body, so let's say you now are at 300. And by the way, if you're at 50 or 75 students, you don't mess with these higher level ideas. But if you were at 300 or 400 students, there's 20% who will want to do at least anything that you offer them. And in most cases, half of them that can afford it. So if I could take 300 students and have a $1,297 a month program, is what I've just done is added over 30,000 a month to my gross, pretty much all pure net. So what happens at these higher levels as we start working with people and peak performers in our circle is there's all kinds of unexploited opportunities. And, you know, it's once we get momentum, in other words, once we get them to 200, 250, 300 or more students, and some are at several thousand, is there's so many different things that are available in their school that they haven't thought about and haven't utilized effectively that we can really bring to the table.
Absolutely. Well, that was actually my point too, Mr. Robert, before we transition. That was my point. My point is exactly that. Again, look at those four modules. There's only four things you can do, right? There are four things that you need to be focused on every day. And it's not always necessarily the obvious opportunity. You know, there are lots of things that, you know, there are lots of ways that we can serve our customers that we're not currently thinking of. And I know in a lot of cases, I know what it feels like to have a location in a difficult demographic and things like that, and sometimes we allow ourselves to think that we're taking the very last dollar out of the pocket of the customer. You know, the tuition that they pay basically completely wipes out their bank account every month, right? That's what in many cases we allow ourselves to believe. it's almost never true, right? I hope it's almost never true because
here's the other question though. If it were true, is it better that a parent spend it with us, or spend it with DirecTV, or spend it at McDonald's, or spend it at the liquor store? Because if they're going to spend it, they're going to spend it. And what having a hesitance about that reveals to me is only it's about, do you really believe that if a student enrolls in your school and sticks with it, that it's going to be the best thing possible in the world for them? If you truly believe that, then you should never be hesitant about that. And again, what it's not like if they spend the money with us, it's money that was going to go in the bank account to be set aside for the child's college tuition, or that it's money that was going to be set aside to have only microbiotically grown fruits to improve their diet. In almost all cases, they're going to spend it on something that is much less valuable than what we're doing. And by the way, I think both of those other examples is much less valuable than what we're doing, both for adults and for kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And again, what most schools are charging for a three-year program is less than the average family spends on a Disney vacation. A four-day Disney vacation. So I mean, that's a four-day deal, and what we do is a 3 or 4 year deal. So certainly we shouldn't be too sensitive about that. Not to beat a dead horse, but I totally agree with what you're saying. I think it goes back a lot to what our beliefs are. And again, if you have a sheet of paper in front of you, the one of the things that we talked about, and we're going to be talking about the marketing bootcamp, but one of the things we talked about last down here at Disney. There's like four concentric circles, and the biggest circle is your beliefs, right? And then we all know what you believe, you'll tend to manifest, right? You attract what you kind of, you get what you kind of give, right? So you what your beliefs are will kind of determine what you focus on, and that then determines what you realize. So it's beliefs, strategy, tactics, and execution. But it starts with your beliefs, and again, like you said, if you really do believe that what you're delivering is invaluable, then a lot of these challenges really do melt away, right? A lot of these areas of, resistance and psychological hesitation and all this stuff, really does melt away. When I sent one of my first students off to an Ivy League university, and they credited me with the fact that she got through her entrance exams and blew them all away. See, that really just solidified a lot of this stuff for me personally, right? I don't know how many times you have to hear that before you say, well, listen, we really have something here. This really is something exceptional, But not to beat a dead horse. So what we're talking about is, that was item number two, basically. How do you leverage more revenue, higher degrees of commitment and revenue and leverage in the school as far as, increasing value per student. So let's talk a little bit about Rubber Meets the Road. We had a couple of questions over email and on the forum over the last couple of weeks about some specific Rubber Meets the Road, how-tos, right? And one of the commonalities was, okay, well, I'm sold, right? I want to be able to offer a higher level program. I'm not currently doing that. I want to have some kind of a black belt club or leadership program or whatever the case may be. What do we teach? How do we do it, right? And obviously it's a pretty vast question, but, from a Rubber Meets the Road standpoint, what would you say the big differentiator is and how would we manage that?
Well, I think the biggest thing to think about with all of these renewal and upgrade programs is you've got to be very careful about how you teach a new prospective student or a new student to think about your business, because they don't have a way in most cases to think about what it is we do. They in most cases don't come in with much of a preconception, and from day one we're teaching them how to think about what it is we do. And so we're either teaching them a way to think about us that anchors in long-term follow-up and anchors in long-term value and anchors in their enthusiasm and willingness to move to new progressively higher levels, or we're self-sabotaging early on into the process. Nationally, as you know, we've accomplished it successfully hundreds of times for peak performers or circle members, but our biggest challenge is in taking somebody who hasn't done this before and converting all of their existing students into the new format, because you've taught them how to think about what it is you do and what your value is. And so we have to spend a lot of time in creating a new dialogue in the mind of those students so that they feel comfortable with the next new thing. So that's, I think, the first thing is you just have to look at from the first call, the minute they walk in, the way you handle them in the intro process, the way you handle them in the enrollment. If you're setting them up to think of this as a lifestyle, as a long-term commitment, as an orientation towards higher level goals and objectives, and really teaching them to think about this as something of high value, then it's relatively easy. However, you've got to not shoot yourself in the foot. And a lot of the ways you shoot yourself in the foot is, we just enroll on a month-to-month basis, cancel anytime you want, don't worry about making a commitment. Or we focus so much on purely physical. And again, this is true for an adult or for a child. Doesn't matter whether it's a women's cardio kickboxing program or a kids program. If we focus on purely on the physical and not on the developmental and not on the ultimate long-term objectives, then we shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's right. So the only thing I think I would add to that is when you're looking at structuring what this higher level thing is, right, whatever that thing is going to be, I think you really, really do have to think about what is the bigger problem that I'm solving? What is the unique selling proposition of this thing, right? It certainly, the physical skills that you're teaching in the school and things like that are important, but what is the alternate sales position? What is this thing really solve? And then you have to just keep in mind that you have two constituencies, and this is something that we really work through at a pretty deep level with all of our guys, that we're working with one-on-one, because I really do believe, let me take a slight tangent here. I really think that one of the cool things about whatever it is that you're teaching in your school is that you have the ability to customize it to your personality and to your personal style and things like that. And again, if I looked at a lot of the things that I like to teach and still like to teach in our leadership programs and things like that, I like Tony's stuff. I like neurolinguistic programming. I think it's an empowering thing. All the neurolinguistic programming neuroassociative conditioning type of strategies that Tony teaches and uses, I think that's something that helps empower people. So that's something that I like to teach. Now, I'm certainly not Tony, and I'm certainly not, going to bounce around like I don't have the skill set that he has necessarily. But those are the types of lessons that resonate with me. Therefore, I give them value. Therefore, when I teach them, the student and the parent finds value there, right? But I wouldn't force that structure onto John Metcalf or Sean Harvey or, right? I mean, they have different personalities. They have different what they feel is valuable is going to be different than what I feel is valuable. Therefore, their customers are preconditioned a bit by what their personality dictates. So I would say that you have two constituencies in your school that you're serving, no matter how you look at it. You've got the student and you've got the parent. And from a pragmatic rubber meets the road, what do I teach standpoint, you have to have some cool physical components of the program that the students are really going to dig. And then you have to have a lot of value-added things that you're going to be teaching and problems that you're going to be solving that the parents really are going to really like, that they really think is valuable. So I think that's kind of, from a rubber meets the road standpoint, a good frame to start with.
Yeah. Well, and I think we probably should step back and do some real practical step by step of how you start to implement this stuff. And if I were to look at this from a standpoint of first what we coach our peak performers and inner circle on, and I know we have a lot of them on the call, but usually what we're looking at from a pricing standpoint with an upgrade process is somewhere between 169 and 269 is a new enrollment tuition. And admittedly, most of them are trending probably a little under 200 for the new enrollment. But then what we're focusing on is having a leadership program and a black belt club. And with the leadership program, the price point is typically about double. So if I was at 199, I might be at 399 or 397. And if I'm looking at black belt club, and of course we're giving everybody a ton of resources for this. The gold team reports are designed to be the support tools for leadership. The National Black Belt Club information is designed to be support materials for Black Belt Club. And as we do this complete new 4G overhaul, there's going to be more and more support tools for those levels. But for the Black Belt Club, typically we're looking at maybe a 50% bump. So I can go from, let's say, a tick under $200 to a tick under $300 to a tick under $400 and be in pretty good shape. And the reason we typically do the intermediate level is as a fallback. The next thing is once we kind of understand that objective, and by the way, this is not then, because next we can do what you're saying, Master Miller, is at one end you could have like a little club for managers and entrepreneurs at $1,000, $1,200, $1,597 a month. That's something we're going to be developing extensively for our peak performer inner circle members to implement. Or at the other end of the spectrum, we could have the high end like I did for Lloyd, the $1,297 or $1,597 high end martial arts program, which is could be a kid's or an adult. In his case, it was an adult male MMA, people who want to be fighters, want to pretend they want to be fighters. But then you can always move to that next step. I think as we step back a second, and Master Smith and I just spent pretty much two full days working with all of our franchise schools on this at an extremely high level. But the thing that I think is the starting point that's most difficult for people to understand sometimes is first contact through to the upgrade into leadership really you should think about that as an extended intro process. So it's not one intro enroll or two intro enroll, throw them over the wall in the class, and 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months later, you know, metaphorically pull them back out from the cold and then start over. What it is it's really, and there's lots of references for, you know, we've been doing this with the Mile High Schools for over 20 years, but it's the same process that Keith Hafner uses, the old J-Kim thing with Kim Taekwondo was, you know, put them in essentially private lessons for the first 30 days until they were in at Black Belt Club or Master Club. And so it's not a new concept. It's just a concept that almost nobody does right. And it's really getting to the point where from the first contact through to the leadership is one extended introductory process. So if you look at it that way, really what you're doing is you're prepping them in the intro for leadership without going into too much detail too early.
Well, yeah, and I think that's right. It does start at the beginning. I mean, it starts at the first intro, and frankly, before that, on the telephone call. But it's all you know what the end outcome that you're looking for is. So you have to orchestrate everything to be able to leverage the end outcome, right? And you're right. It's far too easy for us to again go back to the Holiday Health Spa model, which is they sign the contract, you kick them in the butt and push them into class and, you know, only talk to them again when you want to talk to them about money. And you're exactly right. That's exactly like the opposite of what we have to do. And
but,
like I say, you know, in my personal – oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's a huge mistake that many martial arts schools owners make is in many times they haven't looked at or studied other businesses' models, and what they have seen is they've seen how the local fitness center signed them up. And so now they start thinking in terms of both programs they offer, how they position their pricing, and how they do their enrollment process. They mimic what the 24-hour fitness for the Valleys does. And in almost all cases, not in all cases, but in almost all cases in our industry, it's a huge mistake.
Well, it's modeling, and again, if you take a look at Bally's or if you take a look at the model, what they're trying to do, again, is their objectives are just very different. And what they're trying to do is lower or eliminate any barrier of sale because the people that they have there, you know, they can't as tightly as we can in a single martial arts school or even a organization manage the sales process as well as we can. I mean, they have a $7 hour employee.
Well, that's where I would disagree with you, because some of the most sophisticated sales people are in the health club business. And that's where people like Tommy Lee and so forth came from. They have a very sophisticated sales process. They just know that 90% of the people drop out within 90 days. As you know, I managed a health club for a while before I opened the karate school between the Junri Institute and Mile High Karate. And, you know, we had boxes and boxes and boxes on the front desk. And, you know, 30 years ago, I was a very good salesperson. Could have sold them just about anything. But we had hundreds, if not thousands, of ID cards. And the deal was that they get their ID card in the first 30 days that had never been picked up. So it's really that what they're trying to moderate is the fact that in the typical 24-hour fitness is pretty much everybody who signs up drops out within the first 30 days. They build a head of steam and they figure out that riding the life cycle is difficult and nobody's following up on them anyway, so they drop out. Hey, but anyway, let's go back to practical rubber meets the road. Is what are the common frustrations or the common challenges, Master Milroy, you've seen among the peak performers implementing their renewal process? Where do you see challenges?
Well, I mean the first question was kind of where we were going is you know, from a deliverable standpoint, what is the difference in the deliverable from, you know, an orientation program to a black belt club or a leadership program? Like what is the difference in deliverable? That always seems to be the core question. The second core question is always, well, you know, how do we do it? When do we do it? You know, is this a separate class time? You know, how does all that orchestrate?
Yeah. Well, the one of the things that we see about the deliverable piece is that people get way bogged down in that and then want to spend forever overthinking that. And, you know, as you well know, an awful lot of that material we're providing for members, the rest of the material, we can spend a lot of time walking you through how it specifically applies to the adult market, the kids market, whichever market you're in. The reality is the deliverable necessary for a student to be willing to pay an extra $100 a month or $200 a month does not have to be as dramatic or as robust as most people think it needs to be initially. And oftentimes we're accomplishing that with, you know, a couple of little reading assignments and an extra 15 minutes twice a week in class and a different uniform color or some such thing to give them a perception of being an elite status in the school. So it is something I think people get bogged down in is they think that it's a more complicated thing to implement than it is, or that they need to worry more about the level of content. And the way I look at it is, you know, I feel just fine ethically if I give somebody an extra hour a week for 5 years and create a huge difference in their outcome over 5 years. It may not be a huge difference in their outcome in a month. It may not be a huge difference in their outcome over a couple months, but if I'm keeping them to black belt and secondary black belt, by the time they're done, if it's a huge impact on their life, it's certainly worth the relatively small marginal cost. So, what would you add to that, Ms. Murray?
Well, I mean, just from an example standpoint, when I went through this process originally, you know, the first go round, again, keep in mind it was a very traditional style, very traditional everything. I mean, you know, we weren't allowed to have differential marks on uniforms or anything. I mean, it was, you know, pretty rigid. And really, the first iteration of it, which was, you know, really successful, was we basically literally took three weapons that they used to not be able to do until they were black belts. right? So stick, nunchuck, and longstaff, right? And basically, now that they were in the Black Belt Club, this is when I was Black Belt Club, now that they were in the Black Belt Club, they now got an introduction to those three weapons. And then I think maybe we did some judo or something like that as well, maybe some, you know, some throwing or something. But really, that was it. As far as the physical curriculum goes, there wasn't much more than that. And then it was mostly not about the physical curriculum. It was mostly about this other stuff. You know, it was mostly about the mental and developmental benefits that we were talking about. So you can take an example as vanilla as that, you know, and you can make it work extremely well. It's just something that the students in the school are going to be really excited about, something that previously perhaps they didn't have access to that now they do get access to, or something like that. It doesn't take moving heaven and earth to get that to happen. That's actually the easier of the two quotients, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, the other piece is you don't want to structure it so that it's now you're normally coming to class twice a week and now you have to come to class four times a week. Is that can be optional and a bonus, but the biggest objection you have, if it's a 35-year-old male attorney taking lessons for himself, or it's the soccer mom with a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old, the biggest objection you have is people's lives are busy. And so you don't want to make it predominantly about the extra Black Belt Club class once a week. That's why I like the format of the extra few minutes at the end of class that you bow everybody else out and meet these people stay. So what is the next thing that tends to be a sticking point for a new implementation?
Well, that was part of it. The scheduling part, yeah. You just kind of touched on a little bit. That is part, and I think partially the answer is what you just said. I think you're much better served to not have their perception be that the added benefit of this thing is a special class on Friday, because now everybody who can't make Friday is now a no, right? And you know, you have all sorts of other issues. So that extra, you know, typically, again, in the model that you're describing, you know, a regular class is 45 minutes, the leadership class is an hour, that extra 15 minutes at the end of the class is, you know, everyone else bows out, the leadership students stay, and they do their leadership lessons. Now, when people hear that, I think, unfortunately, they in some cases take that the wrong way. It doesn't mean that you manage only that 15 minutes for leadership. I mean, you've got an hour, you know. So if I'm going to run a class and I want that to be a highly productive class for teaching the leadership students their stuff and, you know, the orientation people students their stuff as well, then I'm going to break them up probably through most of the class. I mean, maybe we warm up together and then we break off into pods to do forms or whatever the case may be. And I can then have the leadership students practicing their leadership skills and abilities, you know, with the other guys or whatever the case may be. So it's not exclusively in that 15 minutes I'm going to be delivering that extra content or that extra value. It's in addition, you know, of what I can do inside the class. So it's a pretty simple degree of class management skill to be able to manage the class so that everybody feels like they're getting what they are supposed to be getting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we open it up for questions? I mean, we haven't gotten very specific yet on the actual step-by-step details, but I'm sure there's some questions, Master Melroy, unless there's specifics that we need to hit in addition. And if we have plenty of questions, we've got about 20 minutes. If not, we can certainly drill deeper on the specific steps of the process, the sales process.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now everyone's muted. To unmute yourself, just hit *6. And you'll be unmuted. You'll be able to jump in and ask any question. I know we did have a few questions submitted by email, so I know that there are some questions out there. Let me pull those up, too, by the way.
Yeah.
But any questions on this topic or, you know, the entire, you know, renewals just as a concept, but also the strategy, how am I leveraging value per student and longevity, those types of things we can address all at once. Pete Johnson had a couple of questions. One of them was that leadership structure that we just kind of talked through. His other one was how do you, when the leadership team is kind of on center stage, you've got people leaving the class and transition happening, how do you manage you know, noise in the lobby and things like that. How would you answer that?
How do you manage noise in the lobby?
Well, you're transitioning now, so you've bowed out all the orientation students. They're moving over to get their things and to leave and all that. Now you've got what he describes as deck noise in the transition period between leadership and leadership. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you two elements of it in very practical terms. Is, you know, our rubber meets the road objective is always for 90% or more to be in the higher level program anyway. So we ain't bowing out that many people. The second part of it is all of those things come down to behavioral norms within the school, right? And so if you're having a trouble with students being noisy or parents being noisy or the transition being, I bring that back to training your students how to behave in your environment. And if it's something you haven't ever done before, there's a little bit of a training a process to go with it. But really, shortly after that process, it should be, you know, everybody who just finished class is tiptoeing off, and in most cases I prefer if they're sitting there in rapt attention watching what all the other people are doing. And the next class is in a very focused mode, and frankly, if you have them all pulled together and you're rather softly talking to them, it's even that much easier for everybody else to get the idea that they need to be really respectful and really cognizant of that other class.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I always thought was pretty important, and I didn't always do it this way. So, I mean, again, I think I've had the opportunity to kind of walk on both sides of the fence on this quite a bit, but, you know, I had lots and lots and lots and lots of problems with that in many different locations, and, you know, one of the things I think that really made a big difference was we just, like, stopped tolerating it, basically, and engage the parents rather than disengaging them. And I think that, you know, for a long time I was considering building little partitions on one side of the, you know, lobby so that everybody could stay over there and the class would be going over here and those types of things. And I did actually go so far as to we put, you know, AV systems into all the schools so that the instructor would be mic'd with a lav mic, right? So we have these big speakers and this little, you know, receiver and everything. And the instructor is wired, basically, for all the classes, and he can just click that thing on and get everybody's attention pretty quickly, right? But, and again, I mean, you know, school's pretty full of classes. I'm sorry?
Yeah, none of that was a suggestion, by the way. Is I find this especially true in some of the adult-oriented schools. It's either you find this true that the parents will misbehave and be disruptive in a kid's in program, or the adults themselves will be disruptive and so forth. And what I think is just so important is that you set every element of your school to be respectful and to behave properly. And it's all about creating that culture. And if you create a culture in an adult program where they're not seeing you as a professor, as a teacher, as opposed to you're just one of their buddies who happens to have more, you know, more knowledge than they do, you've got a problem. And if the instructors aren't treating you like the professor at college as opposed to the nanny, you've got a problem. And so an awful lot of it is the way you carry yourself and the way you set the expectations in your school. One of the things that impressed me greatly at Master Clark School one time I was there was, you know, the parents standing up and bowing in and saying the student creed with the students, and the level of engagement they were getting from the parents. It's exceedingly important to have that outcome so that everybody behaves appropriately in the school environment.
Yeah, well, and you know, again, where I was going with that is that the, you know, I considered the partition thing, and I did do the, you know, we mic'd everybody up and stuff like that, but I'll tell you what made the biggest difference was just we just decided one day that we were going to engage all the parents. So instead of having the students kind of do the mat chat over here on the floor, instead what we did was we had them go sit right in front of the parents' feet in the lobby, you know, on that very edge of the mat, right where the chairs are, you know. And we literally trained all the instructors to stop the parents from doing whatever it was that they were doing, right? If they're reading a book, we would just say, okay, now, Ms. Jones, go ahead and put that book down for me for a second. We've got a couple things that we really need to go through here. It's going to be really important for Johnny, and I really need you, you know, you on board with this. And they would literally, the big paradigm difference that I had in the schools was that I used to teach to the kids and hope that the parents overheard it. And I completely changed that paradigm to say, if we don't fix the parents, nobody will, right? So if we don't fix them, they have the students 373 hours a week, and we only have them three. So we have to permeate that. So we would literally have them go sit right in front of the parents' feet, right at the edge of the lobby, and engage them in the deal. And that does really kind of start to set that standard, start to set the their expectations a little differently. So.
Well, and the exact same thing is true in an adult-oriented school, is if you let a group of adult women behave like this as 24-hour fitness, then you're going to get that kind of behavior. But if you have them behave like this is a martial arts school and you're a highly respected teacher as opposed to you're the gal making $7 an hour teaching the aerobic class, you get the behavior that you expect, and you get the behavior that you train them to give you. And so, it's very important to set up that behavior. What I saw in the first round of the cardio thing with the Taibo is that school owners would run an extremely disciplined kids class and then have a bunch of women come in leotards and tennis shoes who behaved inappropriately and treated the two programs differently, which is a huge mistake. You want to make sure that whether it's adult men, adult women, or parents with their kids, that all of them are taught to treat you respectfully and treat your staff respectfully. And again, if you set them up to think about you're the equivalent of the highly tenured professor at Harvard, they treat you a certain way and they are willing to pay a certain level of tuition. On the other hand, if you set them up to think that you're the buddy or that you're the nanny or that you're the chick who comes in twice a week to teach aerobics at 24-hour fitness, you teach them to treat you at that level of respect.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there might be one more piece of rubber meets the road on this particular item that might be useful is, and again, keep in mind that for me, it was a big paradigm shift between, you know, teaching the students and hoping that the parents overheard, right? And we used to call it teaching through the students. That was kind of our strategy was, you know, hoping the parents assimilated this stuff, you know, through the student and completely reversing that and saying, well, we have to teach everybody, right? One of the strategies I think that is a useful tool in that battle, you know, is, again, all of the homework assignments and things that we're doing to engage the families and what we're doing inside the classroom. You know, once someone walks out the door, they're not thinking about you anymore. You know, now they're engaged in the rest of their life, and they can be distracted very easily. And, you know, you have to do things that bridge that gap from what you're doing in the school to what they're doing at home to reinforce the value of what you're doing in the school, right? So, again, if my mission is to, and I know this is kind of a bit tangential when we're talking about addressing noise issues in a lobby, but it does go to speak to how engaged the families are and what you're doing on the floor. If they're constantly, every class, have some version of a homework assignment that they have to be working on at home, this gives you the excuse and the strategy to talk to them about that. And you've got to stop the class for those 3 minutes and sit the students down in front of the parents' feet and talk about the 7 magic words of respect today, or talk about the 4 laws of concentration, or, you know, the West Point Way of Leadership unit that we're on today, or whatever the case may be. And Mrs. Jones, what I need you to do is take this sheet of paper and stick it on the refrigerator. And when Johnny exhibits X behavior, immediately take him over to the refrigerator and check off that box and initial it. And then he's going to bring that paper back in for his attitude stripe, you know, in the next class. Mrs. Jones, can you help us with that, right? You know, see now you're creating a transformational experience not just 3 hours a week or 2.5 hours a week. Now you're creating a transformational experience at home too. So
yeah.
I think that's a piece of the puzzle that's pretty important for everybody.
And the same is true in an adult Tai Chi program.
Mm-hmm.
The same
mm-hmm.
is true in a women's cardio program. The same is true in a men's MMA program. Is there
I would argue, Mr. Oliver, it's actually a bit easier. Because if you were to take, for example, I don't know, just the psychology of winning, for example, just that, or what to say when you talk to yourself, that stuff really is designed for adults. I mean, it's designed for, teaching human potential and teaching expanding human potential, mostly written at an adult level. So all of those lessons are easier, I think, to translate to the adult market than they are to the children's market. It takes a little bit more creativity with kids, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's not only not a stretch to have a woman come in looking to lose 20 pounds through a few months of cardio kickboxing and now be teaching her self-control and discipline and leadership. It's exactly in sync with what they know they want once you tell it to them. They may not come in asking for it. But once you tell them, look, this is not a quick fix. You know, what most people do is when they lose weight, 90 days later they gain it all back. The level of personal self-discipline and personal development that you need for this to be a permanent change in your lifestyle is important. And you don't work out for 90 days in order to be ready for bikini and then stop and then recycle the thing because it gets worse every time. So, explain to them that it's not a quick fix for the lifestyle change. And then the way that you go about developing the lifestyle is important. And the element about the personal development stuff is what we know is it's very easy to market to parents to show them that we're going to provide personal development for their kids. You market to the adults with different, if you call it bait, different reasons for them to come in. And then behind the scenes, you show them the personal development aspects. And the personal development aspects are the thing that ultimately, once they're in, has the highest value, but it's difficult for them to raise their hand and get them to come in for that to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same. I mean, if you look at, all the numbers in, internet is a great example just because you have quantifiable statistics in most cases, right? I mean, you know how many people are searching for what keywords, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're looking at the adult male market, it's an uncomfortable admission for a man to say, I need to learn how to defend myself, right? They always say, oh, I can take care of myself. So it's a non-productive marketing strategy, well, a less productive marketing strategy to talk to an adult man, 29 years old, to say, hey, listen, we're going to teach you how to defend yourself. However, you take that same guy and you put a different marketing message in front of him. Here's how to defend your home or protect your family in a home invasion or, those types of things. See, those messages aren't as directly connected to his personal ego as learning how to defend yourself if you ever had to, right? So what you're saying is exactly right. And I mean, I think all of these, what is difficult for that human being to admit is the higher level of benefit that we can offer them, They're not willing on the front end to really admit that they need that. But once they start kind of expanding their understanding of what we can do and what their real needs are, it's not difficult once they're in the system. That I think, again, kind of reinforces why it's very useful for both the customer and for us to be able to solve bigger problems later, to be able to solve bigger problems for that student after they've had some initial success or we've started to or in some cases finished, but we've solved other problems for them. So I think all that, the same structure, reinforces the same structure.
Exactly. We're about out of time. Do we have one other question, perhaps?
I don't see anybody's hand up, but anybody who had anything else, just hit *6 on your phone. And I think we addressed, I think we had those three email questions, and I think we addressed that pretty thoroughly. Anything else on this topic for anybody? Just hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted, and you can fire that question through. Don't see anything immediately here, though.
Okay.
But anybody in Florida, you should come on over and visit us next weekend. This coming weekend. Yeah, we're going to be at Waikia Kim's event in Orlando at the Hyatt. So anybody who's close, you might want to drop by.
Is that the one in the airport?
Yeah. It's the same place we had our couple of events.
Okay.
Right inside the airport hotel. It's a great spot. You get off the gate and you walk right up the stairs. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that. Fabulous. And the other thing for everybody to note is, you know, the West Point thing is going to be something we're not going to replicate for a while. It's going to be a fabulous event. Coming up for the Inner Circle and Peak Performers is the West Point retreat, and then the Ultimate Martial Arts Marketing Boot Camp is going to be in early August, and that's going to be, I mean, everything you could possibly want to know about how to fill your school with students. And you know, school I was just at this weekend while we were doing our training was literally every time we looked up out the window, there was another 5-day intros coming in. I think they did 37 intros while we were there for 2 days. They had generated 300 appointments in the previous 2 weeks. I'm talking about our location there in Fresno. And we'll be sharing those strategies as well as an awful lot of other strategies to aggressively fill your school. And then we're going
most of that, by the way, Sasha's doing really without much marketing budget to speak of.
No, it's all just pure, it's pure labor. Mm-hmm. And he's got plenty of growth to spend as much money as he wants at this point. But it is a way to grow a school from small to medium to large without spending $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month or $15,000 a month. So it's a marvelous opportunity. Well, great. Well, that's all I had for today. Let's do remind everybody, one, we want to schedule a time to do a private support call with everybody. And so if you have not done that yet, call Bob at the office, extension 202, and he can schedule a time with myself or with Master Milroy to do that. The other thing is really we have an exciting agenda for the Peak Performers Inner Circle. And third is, soft release is up there and running, but we have a tremendously exciting restructure of the deliverables for the both physical materials for everybody's membership training materials, as well as a dramatic expansion and enhancements on the online presence. If there's anybody here who's not, you know, doesn't mark, you know, bookmarked and perhaps homepage the NAPMA site, and if you're not up there every couple of days and have your staff in there and training every couple of days, you're really missing a lot of opportunity to grow your school. And the last thing I would add is just make sure every month before the call that you're sending or chipping in live questions for myself and Master Milroy. Because the more we can hone in on what you really need, of course, that's one of the things with Peak Performance Inner Circle. We're doing the one-on-one coaching every month to help them really nail in on those things. But be sure and ask those questions.
Absolutely.
That's all I had for today.
Well, thank you, sir. I'll see you in a couple of days.
Okay. Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's right. You're flying tomorrow. That's right. All right. Fantastic.
Okay.
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 Sorry,
thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.